If you're intending to speak today, it would be really helpful if you turned in your speaker slip now, because I'm sort of needing to make the calculations about how long for public comment and how to handle it, and I can't really do that unless I have a sense of how many speakers we have. So right now, there's only 4 speaker slips up here. So if you intend to speak, please turn your speaker slip in. And I haven't started the meeting yet. That's just a note.
Coming in.
Okay, I'm going to call the June 29th meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission to order. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Commissioner Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Here.
Commissioner Melska?
Here.
Commissioner White?
Yeah, here.
Chairperson Christie?
Here. And as much as I would love to start the meeting with a song, we don't have a singer today, so would you please join me for the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, justice for all.
Okay, even though this is a specially scheduled meeting, it's a regularly run meeting, so even though we're here to talk about the Los Osos sewer today, we do have a public comment period for anyone who'd like to address the commission for anything other than the Los Osos sewer. I don't have any speaker slips that indicate there are any speakers, but I see Mr. Greening rushing to the front, so
thank
Mr.
you.
Greening, welcome.
I can drop one in if you need it, but thank you. Good morning. I wasn't sure we would have that, but since we do, I just thought it would be a good thing for the public that's listening and watching if, before you go into the Los Osos wastewater project, you could talk about how far you've gotten on the conservation element update and the likely sequence of events for here at conservation and open space element hearings, so that people who may have other things in writing or whatever will have a reality check on what's likely to happen when and in what sequence. I just think that would be very helpful to people. So thank you very much, and I look forward to an exciting day.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. So do we. Okay, that concludes the public comment period. Mr. Hogue, do you have anything for planning staff updates this morning?
Yes, I have some housekeeping items, if I may, very quickly. First, you have a meeting scheduled tomorrow, too, on Los Osos Sewers. Then your first regular meeting of July has been moved, and it's on next Monday, regular time slot, 9 to 5. And then the Coastal Commission is in this chambers on Wednesday, July 8th through Friday, July 10th. The Wednesday meeting starts at 10 a.m., the Thursday and Friday meetings start at 9 a.m. We do have Central Coast. The Central Coast District items are on Thursday, July 9th, and there are 5 items that concern some dates for the conservation open space element are July 23rd and July 30th. And I believe that the agenda description that we did for the last meeting has the sequence of the items you're going to do, so if people just look for energy, they know what's next.
That's correct.
Okay. And that is, I think, all I have.
And are those the only dates we have scheduled for the...
You know, I just stopped there, but let me continue looking. No, we have August 13th. And after that, we'll just look, you know, we'll see where you are.
Okay. Thank
maybe,
you.
Maybe that'll be enough. If not, we'll find more time.
Great. Thanks.
Okay.
Nothing on the consent agenda this morning. So let's go right to our first and only hearing item.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I'm just booting up here. Continued hearing to consider a request by the County of San Luis Obispo for a development plan coastal development permit to allow construction and operation of a sewer service system. Murray Wilson, project manager.
Mr. Wilson, before you get started with your staff report, thank you, Ms. Hedges. I think commissioners have ex partes to report at this time. I know Commissioner White does, so we'll start with him.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Last hearing on the Los Osos, I believe it was on May 28th, I was approached by here at the podium by Bob Simonson, I believe is his name, and he wanted to discuss with me the benefits and the his opposition to the STEP system. We did not set a time to discuss that any further, so that it was just a comment that he'd like to meet with me on that. And then last Thursday, the 25th, at our regular hearing, Sarah, Christy, and I met with at our lunch break with Dana Ripley, Chuck Cicina, and Cameron Ripley. I was contacted by Chuck Cicina by phone prior to that, and the main topic of that discussion was the sealed pipes or the lack of the sealing of the pipes with the possible water intrusion and sewage extrusion. But I'd like to request that Mr. Ripley maybe could come up today. I see him in the audience here, and so we don't miss anything that we've discussed at that lunch meeting, and maybe share it with the rest of the commission and the public.
And I won't ask him now, but if when we get to public comment, if Mr. Ripley's prepared to give a very brief summation of his material, I think that would be helpful because there was some technical information there that I think would be useful to share with the whole commission, and I don't necessarily trust that you or I could represent
nice
it. So I'm assuming Mr. Ripley has that material with him or is able to summarize it. I see him nodding from the audience. That's a good suggestion, Commissioner White. Any additional ex partes?
No, that's it.
Mr. Melko?
Yeah, I just want to disclose I had a brief phone conversation with Jeff Edwards. Journal items of the whole project, nothing in particular.
Okay. I was at the meeting that Commissioner White disclosed on June 25th with Cameron and Dana Ripley and Chuck Cicina, and again, it was focused on infiltration, primarily infiltration of pipes, and I think Mr. Ripley will adequately represent that information to the commission. I had a brief conversation with Julie Tacker on Friday, specifically about how much time we were going to allow for the speakers today, and I believe that was the... she's urged me to look at Gorby again for the as a disposal option.
I also had a meeting with Dana and Cameron Ripley and Chuck Cicina on Friday, the 26th. Gone. Is that any better?
Yeah.
It is on. Okay, I'll move this way a bit. I had a similar meeting with Chuck Cicina and the Ripleys on Friday the 26th. And Commissioner White discussed the same discussion that we had.
No ex partes?
I have no time for ex partes.
Appreciate that, Ms. Christensen. Okay, so with that, Mr. Wilson, thank you very much. We're ready for your presentation.
Good morning, Commissioners. Happy Monday to you. I would like to start this morning off by introducing an email correspondence that was received by staff this Saturday. We had note that this information was going to be received. It's from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. A copy of the email has been distributed to you this morning. Real quickly, I'd like to summarize what this email had to say. In general, the part of the email was that the Fish and Wildlife Service would like to reiterate to your commission and to the county that there are still issues related to the...
Pretty familiar with, but we did have some response to questions that came up in the last meeting that are contained in the staff report particularly pertaining to sea level rise and the impact on the pipes. And I think it would be helpful for the commissioners and the public to kind of elaborate a little bit on what the conclusions or the information is as a result of that further investigation.
And public works, or I mean, planning staff has no set agenda on how to address this since you did get it under a separate cover late. If you would like to raise questions about the specific items that are in the staff report, public works staff can respond to those, or we can do it in a presentation format, your desire.
Commissioners, any feedback or thoughts on that?
A brief overview might be nice of...
I agree. Yeah. I mean, because we can't really ask questions without seeing the information.
With that being said, I will pass the microphone to Mr. Ugrin, and he will begin the conversation here this morning.
Thank you.
Chairman Christie, members of the commission, Mr. Waddell, I think what we're referencing is a couple of the exhibits that were in the staff report. Mr. Waddell did some additional analysis and put together some exhibits. Where we had left off at the last planning commission was this topic about, you know, groundwater levels relating to the collection system, potential changes in sea level. And with that, I'll let Mr. Waddell jump into some of the exhibits that he put together and where we see opportunities for, you know, conditions. One of the points that he's going to cover is that in the construction, you know, of any project, really some of the workmanship issues and the constructability issues really get into site conditions. So where is it that we see more challenging construction-related issues and therefore would be more supportive of additional conditions versus in other areas where we would propose that a higher level of inspection would be warranted with some potential field decisions depending on specific construction challenges encountered. But with that, John?
Thank you, Chairman Christie, Commissioners, John Waddell, Public Works Department. The exhibits that are in the staff report, I put the first one here up on the screen, relating to pipe depths, and this is similar to a slide that was shown at your previous meeting. In green, and there's a few main areas in the middle of the community, and then one area over on Doris Avenue. Those are the locations in the community where pipe depths are greater than 16 feet. The other blue marks are pipe depths more than 13 feet, and I do want to note a correction, or is that these are the only areas of pipes that are under, below sea, that are in existing groundwater that are more than 13 feet deep. There are other areas in the community where pipes are more than 13 feet deep. There's a table in the previous meeting's PowerPoint and also in the environmental impact report of about a few thousand feet of pipes that are 13 to 16 feet deep, but those are the pipes that are within the that are in groundwater that are more than 13 feet deep in that area there near the Lupin pump station. The next slide is in relation to the specific question that was asked at the last Planning Commission meeting of where are pipes in existing groundwater and then where are pipes that are below 5 feet elevation. And that is in relation to an anticipated potential global sea level rise of approximately 5 feet. So there are a number of areas in the community where there is high groundwater and where the pipes, and then basically comparing groundwater elevation maps with then the existing collection system design, and then the elevation, the plan designed elevations of the pipes. These are the areas, the streets where the pipes would be in groundwater, expected to be in groundwater. In the, just starting out here in the southeast portion, along the Silsos Valley Road in the business district, that's where there's a perched groundwater table due to a clay layer, and so a number of those pipes are expected to be in groundwater. Also over, there's a
some elevated groundwater levels near the junior high. And then there's a kind of a finger of high groundwater that comes in towards Baywood Elementary along El Moro Avenue. The rest of the areas that are in high groundwater are kind of as expected near the bayfront along the local flooding. Of course, there would also be issues with properties and homes potentially being flooded too.
Mr. Hutchin, could I stop you right there with one question? So what you're essentially saying is that with an estimated 5 foot of sea level rise, the surface of the project wouldn't be affected, only underground intrusion, but the surface area of the project would not be affected by that?
Well, with the 5 foot sea level rise, of course, we would expect that the bay or the surface, you know, the ocean would come inland to the new, to wherever it's currently 5 foot elevation. But all of the streets that have pipelines are above that 5 foot elevation.
So surface water rise would not affect any of the infrastructure of the project.
Right. Well, and then there's the groundwater issue.
Yes, I understand.
Fresh or salt water, and based on the existing fresh water that's underground in the community, those levels would correspondingly rise as sea level rise, because of as sea level rose, it would create a barrier or a kind of like a dam, and it would cause then the freshwater levels over land to also rise and reach a new equilibrium, and so the new equilibrium point would be that new sea level at you know, potentially 5 foot elevation. And
but neither water rise would infiltrate the manholes, for instance, or the pump stations.
Right. Well,
at
so
5 feet.
Well, the manhole...
Infiltrate or inundate? Because those are two different things.
Well, I know it would inundate.
Right.
Spill over the top into the surface of the infrastructure was what I was asking. I know the underground water would inundate.
Oh, because I see those two terms as reversed. When I think of inundate, I think of, you know, pouring in.
Yeah, I got that backwards, yes.
And infiltrating.
Infiltrate is
yeah.
To seep in, sure. So what I'm getting at is with the actual... visible water rise, the infrastructure would still be protected from
the surface
water.
The infrastructure would still be above sea level, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
The infrastructure, I mean, define infrastructure, because I'm hearing conflicting information.
Well,
you've identified the pipes that will now be below sea level at an assumed 5 foot level rise. So that infrastructure will be affected by...
Well, the buried infrastructure would be below sea level. It's expected they would still be in fresh water, but the surface infrastructure, manholes and lift stations, would still be above sea level.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
So as far as constructability, any time that there is existing groundwater, expect more difficult construction, you know, dewatering and... you know, potentially saturated, you know, well, definitely saturated soils. And so a more rigorous inspection process would be warranted. The standard construction inspection process is really a process of observation, because the contractors are responsible for their workmanship and the quality, and then they follow standards and specifications, and then that installed product is then tested. But, you know, the actual... you know, there's not typical construction management. There's not an inspector there 100% of the time and holding their hand and watching every move. They do spot inspections. They verify that the quality is there on you know, a sample of the work. And then there's, of course, then a testing regime also. So, but on a case like these pipes here that are shown, you know, additional inspection in these areas may be warranted. Of you know, an actual close physical inspection of the pipes, each pipe as they're going in, each joint, the joints as they are connected and installed.
Well, excuse me, Mr. Waddell, but wasn't staff's previous recommendation that in the areas of high groundwater where the pipes would be below that level, that staff was supporting the fusion welded or the butt welded pipes in those areas?
Well, so that's my next point, is so whether in groundwater that's freshwater, that additional inspection, but then in those areas where they're below
with their in-groundwater and their deep, as in 13 to 16 feet deep, and that's the previous slide here. So down by the loop and pump station, that those would potentially be areas to fusion weld, but they're in-groundwater, and then any maintenance or future work that may be needed because of the depth would be, more expensive than areas where the pipes are not as deep and can be repaired by traditional methods.
But as I understand it, the biggest risk for having pipes in groundwater, whether it's in shallow groundwater or whether it's in deep groundwater, if the pipes are below the level of the groundwater, the most significant risk there is intrusion into the pipes, which happens in a bell and spigot type situation, but doesn't happen in a welded situation. So if you've identified a greater area that is going to be underwater, where the pipes are going to be underwater, at whatever depth they're buried, why is staff not recommending fusion or butt welded pipes in all of those areas?
There is a risk for intrusion in any system that's not under pressure, whether it's, and then bell and spigot, there is a greater risk. However, the joints and the standards, the ASTM standards, those are sealed pipes with elastomeric seals, and so with proper installation and proper inspection, they're expected to be watertight. However, over time, or if there is a problem, there is a potential and a risk, but it's not.
Yes.
Underwater and under the 5 foot elevation.
And I have some notes that I made for myself on that information. So let me see here.
So out of these pipes here that are in existing groundwater, it's approximately 5.2 miles, about 27,000 feet altogether in groundwater. So that is a pretty significant length, and would be a pretty significant cost to do all fusion welding. The pipes that are at less than 5 feet elevation, the pipes in green, is approximately 9,200 feet, or about 1.8 miles. Those would be these areas. And then the pipes that are deep and below 5 foot elevation are the ones on the previous slide, is approximately, and I have that too, approximately about 1,000 feet, or,
And so if we're looking at then the amount of pipe under the 5 foot elevation, 5.2, or in groundwater, 5.2, and under 5, another 1.8, we're looking at approximately 7 miles then?
No, it's pipe,
or
the 1.8.
Or is some of those overlapping?
Well, they all overlap. So out of that 5.2 that's in groundwater, about 1.8 is less than 5 feet elevation. Everything that's less than 5 foot elevation is in groundwater.
Okay, so the 5.2 would be the total amount of pipe. And what percentage of that is the total amount of pipe that we're looking to put in the project? 5.2 of?
Approximately 10%.
It's like 44 miles?
Actually, it's 12%.
Is it 44 miles of pipe total?
Yes.
So it's 12% of the pipe total. Okay, thanks.
You could proceed, unless you're done.
I think I've concluded on on what I was going to share, just these two charts. So, further questions?
Commissioner Christensen, questions?
Nope, I'm good. I understand.
Am I
left? Mr. Waddell, you'll have to forgive me. I think I called you Mr. Hutchinson earlier. It's Monday morning here, so still drinking coffee. But what about sealing of the manholes in these groundwater areas? Will they be watertight sealed also?
Is the manhole lids?
No, the connection where the pipes enter the manholes.
Oh, yes, they also are provided with a rubber watertight seal that is integral to the manhole.
And then the stacking of the rings for the manholes?
And then those would have, they have a gasket between each ring.
And they're relatively watertight then?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, that just reminded me, I have to disclose another ex parte communication. I called my father over the weekend, who is a lifetime career professional in the area of wastewater down in Los Angeles, and I asked him to describe to me in layman's terms detail about how manholes work and how the connections to the manholes work. And just as a caveat, he's a big gravity system supporter, so he's not advocating for one, you know, anything other than that. He's not advocating for anything. He's just answering my questions. And he did bring up to me that because manholes are so deep, there's always subject to settling. And so that's the most typical, the way he described it, area where leaks occur as the structure settles. You've got all these other pipes coming into it at different diameters and at different angles and at different depths. And he said, you know, you can grout them in or you can seal them in another way, but the settling can create infiltration and exfiltration issues. And I apologize for not relaying that ex parte. It's been all sewer all weekend for me, and it all got mushed together. But
if I can follow up to Commissioner White's question and then also to your comment, I do have, and I only had one copy in my notes, but a product spec sheet from the manhole connections that are specified. And I could submit this to the clerk. Okay.
And then, Mr. Waddell, as I'm looking at this aerial view, I'm recalling another map over the same area that was in the EIR that showed the area of perched groundwater. Is there any way you can overlay that? Is that a GIS impossibility?
Well, I do. It would just take some time, but this is shows the same area, and then these are the same pipes. I've been working with this map to kind of prep the one that was in the slides. So, yes, the yellow is where it's less than 10 feet to groundwater, mostly along the bay, also then in the downtown area, and then there's the pocket over near the junior high.
So with 5 foot sea level rise, then it would be less than 5 feet to groundwater in those areas?
Well, not necessarily. The areas inland where groundwater
would be less.
Groundwater is, sure, say, already at 15 feet elevation, may not rise. It's the areas close to the ocean. So instead of having a steeper gradient of groundwater, if the ocean rose up 5 feet, then that gradient would flatten out near the ocean. And so within areas close to the bay, you would potentially have some sea level, the groundwater levels would be rising, you know, behind that where sea level rise, but how far in would cause groundwater to rise would have to be studied.
So basically, for the attachments that you put together for our hearing today, it basically, you worked off the other information that you had in the EIR. I mean, you didn't go out and do any new engineering.
No, this is the information that was the source of that.
And then I have
one reference in the EIR.
One last question, and that is, you know, I understand in an estuary, definitely freshwater is lighter than seawater, and there's a lens there. I'm less clear on how it works in a saturated soil situation. What are the mixing ratios different? Can we really count on the freshwater continuing to be a barrier between the rising sea level that's under it, or is it more fluid, to avoid a pun, in terms of how those two constituents interact?
Well, it's the density difference remains the same, and actually because of the higher density of the sea level, seawater, mm-hmm, compared to freshwater, for every foot of freshwater head that you have above sea level, you have 40 feet of freshwater that goes down below it, below sea level. So if they're at a location near the bay where you might have a 3 foot of freshwater above, you know, your seawater might be at 3 foot elevation, it, that because of the density difference, you'll have fresh water down to a depth of 60 feet below sea level.
So might this
before
be
then the salt water then is coming in underneath it.
So might this be an instance then where this upper aquifer, which we haven't been particularly focused on in terms of necessarily maintaining flows to the upper aquifer, that maintaining flows to the upper aquifer takes on a slightly different complexion because we're relying on that as a barrier for rising sea level?
Well, it's still not a barrier for the lower aquifer where seawater intrusion is happening. But as far as the upper aquifer...
For the pipes.
The pipes. Well, in the EIR, and it's referenced in our project report, there is mapping of the groundwater contours in relation to both current conditions and then with the project. And basically, even with the collection of septic tanks and the wastewater project, because of the urbanized area, the increased runoff from impervious surfaces, the irrigation return flows, that there is still expected to be a significantly higher level of high level of fresh water under the community that will keep groundwater levels at the bay, fresh water to the bay, and additional pumping would. The impacts of additional pumping and how much pumping and what those impacts are, how it would affect, at the bayfront, I'm not sure, although Spencer is here and he potentially can answer that, but the point is that pumping right at the bayfront may cause a problem, but pumping a significant distance inland, there is a pretty large store of fresh water, and then also the pumps are going to be drawing from even in the upper aquifer at a significant depth, far below any of the pipe zone.
And Spencer is who?
I'm sorry, Spencer Harris with Clee Terrace Geologist,
okay.
Who has done a lot of the hydrogeologic analysis on the project.
And he's here as a resource today if we have further questions. Thank you. I'm feeling like we need to go to the public.
Okay, just for that, one more clarification, Mr. Waddell, please. We're referring to this as kind of a hybrid gravity system.
The subject of their work.
And would we guess that would overlap with these areas then, or?
It has the potential. I mean, if they do the analysis and the additional cost of, say, the grinder pump infrastructure on each property and the electrical connections and everything are outweighed by the savings of not having to install gravity lines in high groundwater, then that they could potentially propose that. So they're looking at it from an economic standpoint and of getting the best value, the lowest cost to the community.
Real quick, just to follow up on that, so I understand this. So the bids that you'll be receiving will not be have provisions for extras for finding groundwater. That will all be. There won't be any, it'll be a firm bid, regardless of what groundwater is discovered.
Right, so because the groundwater is known, and so that is, they have to factor that into their proposal price, because that is not an unforeseen or unknown condition.
So it's a weighing of what's the least expensive to do, a combination of the...
So they'll need to evaluate that.
So some of these lines could be a shallower depth line pump to other gravity locations then.
Yes, but then that would involve its own other infrastructure for on-lot pumps. But, potentially that some of these lines could be redesigned as a low pressure or even as a gravity line, but at a shallower depth if they come up with a more optimized design.
Thank you.
Okay, time to go. Thank you for that, Mr. Waddell. And thank you for putting that material together in response to our questions last time around. It's time to go to the public. I have 16 speaker slips here, and that's a manageable number, in my opinion. So what I'm going to do, I think, is because we're going to be finishing up the discussion on pipes today, and then we're going to be moving on to the siting question. And should we get through the siting question today, we'll then be moving on to the disposal system. So that's quite a lot of topics for us to cover, or at least begin to cover today. So it's my preference to open up the staff, or I'm sorry, to open up the public comment and give everyone who has turned in a speaker slip by now. It's 9:43. I'm not going to take any more speaker slips. To give all the speakers 3 minutes, and you have that 3 minutes to address the pipes, the siting, the disposal, if you think we're going to get that far today, or any singly or any combination thereof. That'll take close to 40 minutes, and I think that's a reasonable way to approach it, given the new information we've received today and the new territory we're about to cover. So before we start with our first speaker, which is going to be Don Bearden, I'm going to ask Dana Ripley if he could come give the commission and the public a brief summary of the information that he conveyed to three of the commissioners last week relative to the pipes. And it's fortuitous that you're here today, Mr. Ripley, because if you weren't, you would have had to have relied on us to adequately convey the information. Can I ask you how much time you think you'll need in your briefest? Well, we'll give you five, because you certainly took more than that when at lunch the other day. So. And we won't start it until we get your overhead focused. And just for reference, it looks like this was in your rebuttal report as well, so if commissioners would rather just look at it directly.
Thank you. Mike, this is microphone.
Mike. We can hear you, but I'm not sure that the IT folks are picking you up. And the people in the back can't hear. So maybe talk right into the mic.
How's that? I see there.
The big silver door opening.
Okay. Got it. Okay, yes. Planning Commissioner Dana Ripley, Ripley Pacific Company, Pleasanton, California. Yes, this diagram was in Appendix B of the, we call it the step rebuttal report. This is out of an EPA 2000 document. And this graphic, I kind of like this graphic showing the vulnerability locations for a gravity sewer system, and it shows very specifically potential vulnerabilities. If you'll notice, all of the arrows are pointing out, and the reason for that is this in the house lateral. And the references that are in Appendix B indicate that that percentage could be in the order of 50 to 70%. And also, as you indicated, Commissioner Christie, that there can be differential settlement with respect to the manhole penetrations, plastic pipe to concrete manholes. And that is a very serious location, even with plastic elastomeric seals that may be sealed in the early years. But however, over time, with earthquakes and differential settlement, those penetrations into the manholes can be a significant source of penetration. Moving on, this is a project we discussed last week. City of Lathrop, a new development plan. This is a graphic or a satellite image, a Google satellite image dated August 2004, showing mass grading on a relatively new development project. This is the San Joaquin River that flows to the northwest at this location. This is the Mossdale Bridge. I-5 crosses the San Joaquin River at this point. This is I-5 going north and Highway 120 going to the east. This is an interesting project. I worked for the master developer on another project. I was not a consultant on this project. Okay, again, the date on this is 2004.
This is a photograph that I took of the site, or of the San Joaquin River, on located right on the levee adjacent to the project. This was August of 2005. This is another view of the levee looking to the north. And this was a controversial issue in the approval cycle of this project as to whether the levee would in fact protect the development from floods at the 100-year return level. I'm looking for a, I'm missing a, excuse me, I'm okay. Okay, this is a photograph showing, this is a photograph that I took August of 2005 showing the development occurring right adjacent to the levee on the San Joaquin River. Again, 2005. There was a flood event in 2006, and this is from the Department of Water Resource website, and again, all these materials are in Appendix B. This shows a flood event measured at the Mossdale Bridge. The time scale there is December 2005 to the 1st of February 2006. The city of Lathrop had some issues that they identified in 2005. Again, a brand new sewer collection system. The purple line shows, this is what they call basin 4, measured in a manhole with a flow meter. In basin 4, this is from January of 06 to, it looks like, August of 06. And the lower line shows potable water deliveries to the basin, and again, it's a brand new sewer collection system. And the upper line represents sewer flow measured for the same basin, same time period. And you can see the increase in flows there. I call it a transient increase, and I believe that's due to the high level of the San Joaquin River right adjacent. And as you can see, the flows, wastewater flows, far exceeded the potable water delivery to the subdivision, that particular basin, up until about June of 06.
So the peak in the green line essentially corresponds to the flood event with some time lag.
There's a lag.
For
groundwater
for the percolation,
settling
down. Right.
Correct. So the point here is I believe this is a shallow perch groundwater caused by a transient flood event, high level in the San Joaquin River, and it shows that these bell and spigot sewer lines, manholes, brand new system, has a severe leakage issue the first year of operation. What I'd like to do is to share with you the importance of eliminate sources of salinity to the system. And so what we've got here is an effluent quality projected of 620, which I would agree that that's probably pretty close. But that's an effluent quality that needs to be protected. This project needs to protect that and eliminate any sources of salinity into the system. My last graphic is again out of Appendix D of the draft EIR, and this shows the extent of the perching clay layer identified by Hopkins. And I think that the salinity issue, whether the groundwater is perched groundwater or saline tidal water, I think either case needs to be, there needs to be assurances that that water does not enter the collection system. Even though the perched groundwater may not add the level of salinity to the effluent quality, it does add capacity issues with respect to the treatment plant and storage. And that concludes my presentation. I think that summarizes what we discussed last week.
It does, but Commissioner White asked a question during that meeting that I thought was very helpful. To summarize, it was like he said, look, these things are tested, they're watertight. How can they be tested and be watertight and then be leaking in real life? And your comment had something to do with the pressure that they're tested under?
Well,
do you recall that exchange?
To really answer that, you've got to go to the history of gravity sewers. Gravity sewers have been around for a century and a half.
Let's not go to the history of gravity sewers.
The gravity sewer, the test pressures are typically 2 to 4 pounds per square inch. So you fill the manhole and see if it leaks. And those are very nominal test pressures. The step pressure collection system, on the other hand, would have a test pressure very similar to a potable system, which is probably 150 pounds per square inch over a 24-hour period and measure the pressure drop. It's very different testing protocols.
Okay. Thank you very much for that presentation, Mr. Ripley. Any questions? Commissioner Wyatt, was there any additional information? Oh, God, I'm sorry. Any additional information in your meeting that...
No. Okay. Sounds like we covered.
Thank you. Okay, so it's time to move on to the public comment. And you all know the drill. I'm going to call the first speaker and the second speaker. First speaker comes to the podium. Second speaker comes to the front row to save on time. Everybody's going to get 3 minutes. I'm not taking any more speaker slips at this point. Our first speaker is Don Bearden, and Don Bearden is followed by Gretchen Clark. Welcome, Mr. Bearden. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Don Bearden, Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. The drawing that I gave out to you shows the lift required for a pocket pump station on 11th Street. It's very detailed. This is one of over 400 drawings for a gravity collection system. So it makes a stack of paper about that thick. The single drawing submitted by AIRVAC won't work as drawn. Also, there is no details of the vacuum collection tanks on that drawing, just the isolation valves. The drawings for a step collection system in the Ripley report show no details for step tank and controls location on each lot. Nobody's gone around to every lot and looked to see where the tank would be and what's interfering with the tank, whether it's a gas line that has to be moved, like my neighbor across the street would have to do, who pays for that, or you can't have it within 5 feet of the property line, you can't have it within 10 feet of the water main. All these constrictions have never been identified for each lot in Los Osos. And how much lot, how are you get electrical power to the tank? Nobody's gone along and looked at each box or each panel in each house to see where you would connect the line and how you'd get it out to the tank. So this is a lot of details that you can spend hours and months and days and years on developing. The devil is in the details. As another thing, approximately 3,000 feet of bell and spigot pipe has already been installed for a gravity collection system. This is approximately 1.3% of the project already. It's already done. The more we delay, the more we pay. I support gravity now, and I think we need to get on with it. If we start doing the details on all this other stuff, it's going to take us years to get finished. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bearden. Gretchen Clark, followed by Eric Greening.
Hi, Commissioners. Gretchen Clark, 16th Street, Los Osos. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today. And thank you so much for the level of detail that you are giving to examining this project. I'm here for services. However, in their memo to the LOCSD and the Planning Commission, CalPAR does not offer any response time statistics to justify their recommendation for removal of these barricades. I have put post-its on the relevant pages that do recommend removal of the barricades. And we believe that this would create a number of problems. These barricades have been in place for at least 20 years on these streets. It would create a safety hazard. It would add re-engineering and construction costs to the total project. It would probably downgrade our property values. Everybody who bought on these streets bought because they were cul-de-sac streets. And the other thing is that the homeowners who would be impacted by this were not apprised of this proposal. So it just came to our attention by chance. So what I did is I went out and collected 35 signatures from affected homeowners in 16th, 17th, and 18th Street who would all recommend and urge you to reconsider this particular recommendation on the part of the CSD and have some more alternative discussion, including the whole community and the affected homeowners. Again, thank you for your time and your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Eric Greening, followed by Chuck Sasenia.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I'm primarily going to discuss siting concerns, but on collection, before you take an action, there are a few questions and considerations. First of all, remember the huge concerns that have been raised relative to cultural resource impacts. And in that connection, do we know what is the ratio between zone of disturbance in all three dimensions for gravity versus vacuum? And then how can we quantify the relative impact of step steg given the unknowns? Much of the impact there is transferred to individual properties, and we don't know the extent to which tanks can be collective rather than on individual lots or whatever. Is there anything close to a project description where step steg could be fairly compared with the others? But generally, do think of the cultural resource impacts. They're huge, and so this decision is huge. My biggest concern on siting is Ag Policy 24 and its integrity. And when you act on any project that requires conversion of agricultural land, I urge you to have the needed findings of Ag Policy 24 in front of you. If they're not in physical documents, I'm sure Ms. Alkinicki or someone from the Ag Department can go over them with you. But quite frankly, for the Tonini site, all of the findings you need to make, there's five bullet points and then this additional one on groundwater recharge, all of them are problematic, and the first four look as though they absolutely, simply, flat out cannot be made. You are not adjacent to incompatible uses. You are not in a place where you do no harm to surrounding agriculture. You're in productive agriculture, on productive agriculture, surrounded by productive agriculture. There is simply no way you can make those findings relative to Ag Policy 24. And my concern on that, I'm not from Los Osos. I'm one of the few people who speaks regularly on this who's not from Los Osos. There is a huge countywide concern with the integrity of Ag Policy 24. If you pretend to find, for the sake of this project, however important it might be, findings that flat out cannot be made, you will have blown a hole in Ag Policy 24. The Tonini site would probably be litigated. Do you want the county to have to defend the indefensible, to defend deciding that something is important so we'll blow a hole in Ag Policy 24? What would be the impact of that on agricultural land countywide and the integrity of our ag and open space elements? So please do consider that when you get to siting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Chuck Sasenia, followed by Maria Kelly.
Morning, Commissioners. Chuck Sasenia, resident of Los Osos. The staff report had an interesting tone to it in that it essentially blames the water purveyors for overpumping of the groundwater basin, totally fails to acknowledge the county's role in allowing all the development which requires the groundwater to be pumped. It's even underlined that sentence. Staff report continues Public Works claims that they have no authority to confront water supply issues due to AB 2701, when in fact that legislation expressly gives authority to the county to include the use of recycled water from the project in basin management planning. Groundwater basin is in adjudication. State Water Code 13550 gives authority to the county to require agricultural and other uses of reclaimed water in place of potable water. You can read tests for all PVC pipe laid 30 days post-construction as required by ASTM D2321. They like to quote those references about sealed pipes, and this is the testing we do under ASTM standards. Well, ASTM standards also call for deflection testing of that PVC pipe to make sure you've got those connections right.
Thanks. I'm trusting they know what you're talking about, because I don't. Maria Kelly, followed by Julie Tacker.
Good morning, Commissioners. Thank you again for your, again, like Gretchen Clark said, your attention to detail and the time that you're taking in considering this regarding Los Osos. I would request again that you keep in mind the cost associated with this project, the cost associated with mitigation, and any additional costs that can be avoided for a project that just solves the problem. It's just a different way to get to the solution. I do not believe in perfection. I do not believe that there is one situation that is going to supersede any other. I think that there's an environmentally preferred project before you. I think you need to do your deliberations and take that into consideration, but keeping in mind that each project that and each portion of it has had a series of solutions to it, and they've brought you what they think is the best project. So please continue the process to go through this, and I just want to thank you for your time. I would like to question Mr. Ripley's intentions. He was hired by the CSD to do a job. He did the job. His litigation, he's in the bankruptcy as far as what he is owed. I just continue to be concerned as to the incredible level of interest, the information, and what is being overlooked. What gets overlooked is the potential financial benefits that he could gain if his suggestions are potentially brought forward. What's overlooked is the discussion, how this would impact multifamily homes, businesses. There, and in regards to the fact what he submitted is saying that concrete tanks were specified all along, Aranco and Mr. Ripley were in Los Osos over the last couple years, and they're the ones that brought the fiberglass tank to Los Osos as a way to approach the collection system. So I have some real concerns as to the amount of time and authority be given this gentleman, as there are other experts and professionals who have additional information that maybe come from a different bias, because there's no question that what is being presented is one opinion of one story, of one bias, and the implications have a cost to this community. In delay, in technique, it discounts any of the collection system that's been installed, and it discounts the homeowner's preference, as you have been told thus far. So I would really like you to take that into consideration as you're making your decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Before you leave the podium, I'm comparing your comments today to an ex parte that I reported previously between the two of us, where you summarized by saying basically all the systems could work.
Correct.
And all the systems, it's just a question of where you want to spend the money. Do you want to front load the money?
Correct.
Or do you want to back end the money?
Right.
So I misinterpreted that conversation that we had, but when you're saying that STEP has significant costs to the homeowners, it's
as far as ongoing studies require, I think staff has been very clear that to continue to bring that to the design build process and to bring it forward to the point where it would be actually able to be installed would be costly in time as well as on lot homeowner costs.
Okay.
Initial upfront costs. So I have some concerns about that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Julie Tacker is our next speaker, followed by Jeff Edwards.
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker. Do I look stupid spraying Los Osos water into the air? I feel stupid. That's because spraying Los Osos water into the air is stupid. So, we'd like to hear a report from your field trip to Monterey for the benefit of the public and the commissioner that was not able to attend. I have to object to the developer-written staff report that is called a memorandum. On the website, it's called staff report. It was uploaded sometime Thursday afternoon, giving very little time for the public to prepare or respond. Furthermore, the staff report is condescending to the public. It uses semantics, calling disposal irrigation as though that's beneficial. It's disposal. You're throwing water somewhere, and in this case, into the air at Tonini. It claims that further analysis on the project is infeasible. That's because the project is broke. Perhaps that study that Ms. Kelly just referenced about preferences, some $54,000 was spent on a study that was biased. So it's the ISJ Participants Work Program. And if you'll go through it, it doesn't build anything. These purveyors are not going to pick up that ball and run with it anytime soon. So I hope you condition the project to keep the water in the basin. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Our next speaker is Jeff Edwards, followed by Keith Weimer. And I do want to say I'm continuing to get speaker slips, but I did announce earlier that I'm not taking any more speaker slips because we're giving additional time, we're giving the full 3 minutes to the speakers that we had when we began public comment. And that's the time we've allotted for public comment today. So we will be having another hearing tomorrow. Those speakers, I encourage you to come back and get your speaker slips in earlier tomorrow. Mr. Edwards, you have 3 minutes. Bless you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioners, good morning. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'd like to just touch on what I think are the two key aspects of this project, and that are the treatment site location and the effluent disposal program. The staff report goes into a lot of detail and regurgitates a lot of history, yet it discounts many of the comments that have been made by the public in terms of where to take this project. A little history. In 1989, when the county had the wastewater project, it was a couple iterations ago, they investigated the creek for a surface water discharge. And I'm going to submit a copy of the Planning Commission staff report for that time. And at that time, the disposal concept had two prongs. One was a dry weather release point on Upper Los Osos Creek near the existing AT&T lines. And then during wet weather, the rapid infiltration basins would be located south of Highland, which is now our Broderson site. And we're also contemplating a subsurface disposal at Broderson. So those two locations have for 20 years been key components of a wastewater disposal project. And I would add that we have one more now. We have a third leg in that chair, and that's the ag in lieu. So if you'll see the overhead, we have a treatment site location at Gorby, which is central to three discharge points. One at the creek at Gorby, the other one would be at Broderson, and then the third would be the ag in lieu options. So, and the reason I talk about the Gorby site is that it's close and proximate to all these locations, and it's at the edge of town. It touches the community. Staff has, in their report, discounted Gorby time and time again as a treatment site location and as a distribution hub for treated effluent because of perceived issues regarding seismic. Perceived biological concerns, but there's no evidence in the record that would establish their position at all. In fact, I've provided evidence to the contrary. Comparing Tonini to Gorby, Gorby is a safety valve at the creek in the summertime, with the wintertime safety valve being at Broderson. The additional cost of Tonini compared to Broderson is well over $10 million when you compare the extra length of piping, land cost, and the ag easement that would otherwise be required for the Tonini site. It is feasible to move forward on Gorby using it as a distribution hub. Thank you, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Keith Weimer is our next speaker, followed by Tom Hollis.
Mike. Thank you for the opportunity to go with you to Monterey. It was very eye-opening, and the Los Osos Sustainability Group has updated its recommendations as a result of that information, and also information on seawater intrusion. It's much worse than people think. First, just a brief comment on the our recommendation for the collection system. We simply recommend that the step stake system and other small pipe systems go forward as part of the design-build process. Let the design-build process sort out some of these issues and make it a requirement that there is a hard estimate for maintenance of these systems, too, because the big question mark with the, I think you see with the gravity system is that we don't know how much that maintenance is going to be, how much the repairs are going to be in the future, and you can lose the basin. If you lose the basin, there's no reason for the project. You get a $150 million project and no water to clean up anymore. So that's why we're saying that needs to happen. Here is another view of it. This view, this is downtown. So this seawater intrusion in the very lowest aquifer is most likely all the way under downtown. We're talking about it being a full 50% through the water supply there. This is the overriding concern. This will kill the basin faster than nitrates. This project has got to address that or it's worth nothing. This doesn't show up very well, so I'm going to skip it. This one right here shows that the level of the aquifer, Zone D, is actually at sea level for most of it, 5 feet below for a portion of it, and 10 feet below in portions of it. What this doesn't show is that in order for Zone D to not have seawater intrusion, it has to be 7 feet above sea level. So this is, in this portion here, it's 17 feet below sea level. Here is the Palisades Well. No wonder seawater intrusion is moving through the basin. We got to stop the pumping of that basin. It's got, and conservation is the quickest way to do it. That's why we offer a plan. We're calling for a 3-year stop to seawater intrusion using our intensive conservation plan. And we provide a lot of details for how that can be accomplished. We really hope that you'll seriously consider implementing that. Here's another point I want to make real quick. The EIR never really dealt with environmental impacts to ecosystems. This is the Willow Creek drainage that goes right through a section of town. These people aren't affected by the sewer. This is in the non-prohibition zone. But all this green area here, big stands of trees and so on, here's Edo Lake, that will virtually dry up with the project. That will be gone. 438 acre feet are now going from the perch layer into that, and it's going to be reduced to virtually zero.
Thank you, Mr. Weimer. Before you leave the podium, the first graphic you put on that shows
yes.
the rate of seawater intrusion, that's a fairly compelling graphic. Can I ask you to cite your source on that?
This number right, it's based largely on this number right here. This is the latest water quality data, chloride level for the Palisades Well.
And that information is coming
yes.
from, is the
I
regional
asked,
board monitoring that? Is the CSD monitoring it? Where's that information coming from?
Yeah, I asked the LOCSD if I could have this information, and their lawyer authorized that, and Rob Miller gave me a call and provided that information to me.
So
please. Yes.
So this is the result of the CSD's ongoing monitoring wells.
Right, and I'm basing this intrusion here on that 250 milligram. That is the that is what was set for this line right here, and now that 250 milligrams is right here.
Okay.
Okay.
And the last, so that's 2009. So that is the current location of the intrusion.
Yes.
Current information.
Yes.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Weimer. The next speaker is Tom Hollis, followed by Rian Gulasa.
Okay, good morning. My name is Tom Hollis. I'm a 19-year resident of Los Osos. I spent 10 years working environmental consulting, soil and groundwater investigations. For the last 14 years, I've been a high school teacher, science teacher at Tascadero High School, and I also teach geology for Cuesta. Being a teacher, I would be checking for understanding instead of just talking at you, so this is kind of difficult for me. So I'm going to make a couple assumptions. Of course, what Keith just showed you is that the assumption is that we do have saltwater intrusion, and that you also understand that that saltwater intrusion is the result of overpumping, taking out more from the basin than what is actually going in. The basin is an overdraft. And ignoring what nature is doing, the precipitation and infiltration, and then loss by movement of fresh water into the salt water, the migration of fresh water towards the ocean, and the loss from springs and stuff, ignoring all that and just looking at what is going in and what is coming out, well, we're pumping more than what is going into that basin, and this is why we have saltwater intrusion. Well, looking at what is going in, again, ignoring what nature is doing, is that it is the septic tanks that are providing water to that groundwater basin there. And that doing the sewer system, that we are taking these offline, and we are actually removing that source of groundwater. And when I hear about stuff where we're going to take effluent water from that sewage plant and spray it onto fields and do other stuff, we've basically pulled that offline as a supply to the basin, and now we're not going to put it back. So my first point that I want to make here is that in order to reduce the amount of water that we're actually pulling out of that basin and try and put it in a balance, again, I look at this like finances. You only take out of your bank account what you're putting in. We need to balance that groundwater basin by not pulling out any more than what we're putting back into it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hollis. Our next speaker is Ryan Gulasa, followed by Richard Margetson.
Hi, Ryan Gulasa, Los Osos, and another Atascadero teacher. I'm just going to sum up the Los Osos Sustainability Group recommendations right here. Essential conditions for the Los Osos Wastewater Project. Number one, a basin-wide management plan to stop saltwater intrusion within 3 years within a margin of safety, integrating the Los Osos Wastewater Project and maximizing conservation. Number two, a requirement that the Los Osos Wastewater Project mitigates for potential and significant negative impacts to sensitive ecosystems. Number three, a requirement that a low-energy, nature-based treatment system is used that minimizes solids handling. And number four, a requirement that dedicated 100% small pipe sealed collection system options, step stag, vacuum, and low pressure are included in the project design build process. Number five, a requirement for current population numbers, water rate uses, and build out estimates to be corrected with an intensive conservation program factored in and project sizing reduced accordingly. Number six, a requirement that spray fields are eliminated as a project option and all recycled water is used to stop seawater intrusion and support sensitive ecosystems from project startup on. Number seven, a requirement that the proposed Tonini treatment site is eliminated as a project option and the treatment site is located near town or in town if treatment is handled using nature-based systems such as underground wetlands, greenhouse technologies, or eco-machines by John Todd Ecological Design. Thank you.
Thank you. We're at our morning break time. We have 8 speakers left, so I'm going to just touch base with commissioners. Do you want to plow through the rest of the public comment, or would you like to take your morning break now?
Take a break.
We're calling for, I hear the commissioner from the district calling for a break.
Take a short break.
So let's make it 10 instead of 15 minutes. We'll be back at 10.
We want to listen to you, not be distracted here by other means.
So we'll see you at 10:40.